not.
Right? Yeah. And then she... continue her MD of course. Okay, so she graduated in class 2005 or 6. Okay, all right. And then she has been the attending, so you actually will be seeing her quite a lot, right? So be very nice to her, right? And focus, pay attention to the lecture, and the lecture itself says the most important thing about what we are doing. Okay, so we'll be doing local anesthesia quite a lot. Okay, so patient usually are afraid of you, bring a needle. And then that's actually our sign, it's a needle with us. Not a gun, it's a needle. So Dr. Wang is going to give this a wonderful lecture, so enjoy the show, right? Okay, let's give it a round of applause.
Well, not too long ago, I was sitting in your chair, daydreaming. Not too long ago, I was just sitting right at your chair, thinking that, wow, there's such a long way to go. I just started, and what am I going to do a few years from now? What choices do I have, and why am I sitting here listening to all this anatomy, and what does it have to do with me? And believe me, you need to know your anatomy really, really well, because someday you're going to carry that really long needle, and you're going to wave it in front of your patients, hopefully not. But you're going to inject, and you're going to make your patient comfortable and numb, and then you're going to do the dental work. So you will get there before you know it, and the school has it set out for you that I believe you have to inject each other, right, before you actually inject the patients. So guess what? Really, you've got to know your anatomy, otherwise you're going to have a lot of enemies. So I'm going to begin. So today's lecture is going to be on local anesthesia for the oral facial region, anatomy and technique. And I will go through a little bit of the anatomy with you, and then I will go through some techniques, and I'm also going to show you some of my pet peeves, so that when you're in the clinic, you'll remember what I don't like. Hopefully this is a book that you're using. Okay. Anatomic considerations. All right, maxillary nerve. You guys had, did they already do the head and neck?
They haven't, they already had an introductory with a finger nerve 5 and 7, that's it.
Oh, okay, well, perfect. Guess what? 5 is here. All right, so maxillary, okay, here's 5, and V1, V2, and V3, okay, here's the maxillary nerve. Passes through the foramen, rotundum, okay, and then it goes into the pterygopalatine fossa. So before it goes into the infraorbital, which I'll explain a little bit more later, it divides, okay? The maxillary nerve makes up the following nerves. The zygomatic, the pterygopalatine nerves, which then includes the nasal palatine and the palatal branches, which are the greater palatine nerve, the lesser, and the pharyngeal branches. You have the posterior superior alveolar nerve, which is very important when you numb up the upper molars. The infraorbital, which makes up the middle superior alveolar and the anterior superior alveolar. And you've got some of the branches of the face. The posterior superior alveolar nerve, okay, so what happens is that it descends, okay, from the main trunk, from the maxillary, and it goes into the pterygopalatine fossa, okay, and part of it goes into the infraorbital canal. This provides a sensory nerve, part of the mucosal of your sinus, the maxillary sinus, and the alveolar bone, and of course, the periodontal ligaments and the pulpal tissues of the molars. This is the greater palatine nerve. This is the nasal palatine nerve. The greater palatine nerve pretty much supplies right here from the premolar and back. the nasal palatine covers the premaxilla. Okay? The middle superior alveolar nerve, okay, this is the infraorbital nerve that makes up the middle superior alveolar and the anterior superior alveolar, the MSA and the ASA. And some people have the middle, some people don't. So 54%. Okay, so if MSA is not there, then the ASA pretty much takes over, and it can provide sensation all the way to as far back as the molar, as the first molar. Okay. And of course, anterior sensory nerve to the canine, the centrals, and possibly back towards the first molar. Mandibular nerve, V3. Okay. So that also divides into a few branches of its own, and it carries both motor and sensory fibers. We'll have 2 to 3 millimeters before it starts branching and going into the canal. Okay? You've got two divisions, the anterior division and the posterior division. The anterior division makes up the muscles of mastication and also the long buccal. And the posterior is the rest, okay? The auriculotemporal, the lingual, the inferior alveolar, etc. Long buccal nerve. You know, who had their third molars removed already? Wisdom teeth. Oh, good number of you. So, you know, when your doctor numb you up, they give you one injection that's way back into the mouth as if you feel like you have it down in your throat, okay? Then the other one is on the side. Believe me, you need to do that one, the one on the side. That's the long buccal nerve. Because if you forget, and sometimes you do as a beginner, you think that you just give the inferior alveolar nerve injection, okay, that person's numb, and you forget the long buccal nerve. You begin to do surgery, and then you hear your patient screaming because you forgot. Okay, it's easily forgotten, but very important nerve because it provides sensation to the buccal gingival tissue of the molars and also the buccal mucosa. Okay, and it passes between the two heads of the lateral pterygoid muscle and comes in front of the ramus, comes in front of the ramus, and comes off buccal. The mesenteric nerve, it comes into the front of the TM joint, the temporomandibular joint, enters, of course, the masseter muscle. The auriculotemporal nerve, it loops behind the condylar neck and it gives sensation to the temporalis region and to the external auditory canal. This is the inferior alveolar nerve and the mental nerve. This is the mental foramen that the nerve comes out of. Can I explain that? The inferior alveolar nerve, the largest branch of the mandibular nerve, the number 5, okay? And it is, of course, it travels along with the artery and with the veins. It gives all the focal anesthesia to the mandibular teeth. Comes out of the mental foramen, which then divides into the mental and the incisal branches, which are pretty self-explanatory. The incisal branch goes into the incisors, the canines, and the mental nerve, which then innervates the outside, the skin of the chin, and also the mucous membrane. There's still a myohyoid branch. Sometimes when you give the inferior alveolar nerve block. After you give it, you think that the patient's numb already, but then when you begin to do surgery or you begin to excavate, the patient's still a little sensitive, and you know that the patient's tongue is numb, the patient, everything else is numb, but there's still a portion. The patient's still not fully numb, and you're not really sure why. That's the myohyoid nerve. There is a branch that may still be sensitive. So that's highlighted in yellow. I think it's a little bit hard for you to see with the lighting. So it runs into the myohyoid groove and into the muscle. It provides motor to the myohyoid muscle and the anterior belly of the digastric and some of the fibers to the skin of the mental protuberance and also some of the innovation to the Menti building sizers and definitely the molars too. And the lingual nerve, which supplies the tongue, okay, it branches off and right here, this one, with the looping, okay. And it also branches off right before the inferior alveolar nerve goes into the canal. It proceeds anteriorly and loops around the submandibular gland duct. Provides a sensory to the anterior two-thirds of the tongue and also remind you that the chord of tympani, which is number 7, also provides this taste. Okay, now on to some of the techniques. Before I even start, I just want you to remember that you, before you even taking out the needle to prepare to numb up the patient, you gotta know your patients very well. You gotta know how anxious they are, you gotta know who they are, you have to know what are some of their histories. I have patients who come to me and tell me that, oh, I'm allergic to all the dental anesthesia. So you can't just take it as that, oh, okay, so I'm not gonna give you any. You have to tell them, well, you have to ask them, well, what do you mean by allergy? Because to them, any effect that's unpleasant is allergy. That's not true. That's not true. They'll tell you, well, I have heart palpitation. Well, guess what? That's part of the anesthesia, because within the cartridge of anesthesia, you have epinephrine in there. Most of the time we give it, okay, the cartridge with the epinephrine. So it's the epinephrine and also their own anxiety level that's going to give them the palpitation. That's not allergy. So you need to know your patients very well. You have to know the patient's anxiety, because I did have a patient who, she was very anxious, but she tried to control herself very, very well. So she was kind of quiet. She worked very hard to be very calm, but as soon as I was about to give anesthesia, she just burst out, you know, crying. She was bawling uncontrollably. So you need to find out, well, you know, what can I do to help you feel better? A lot of times you have to talk them through. You have to tell them what you're about to do so that they have preparation. Again, communication is key. Another thing is you have to know your anatomy. You have to know your anatomy, okay? Because if you don't know where you're gonna inject, you're gonna be nervous. You're gonna make the patient even more nervous because you're nervous, okay? They can see that. Another thing is don't wave your needle in front of the patient. Because if you're doing this, okay, and the needle is really long, if you're doing this, trust me, they're going to be having palpitations before you even inject the epinephrine. So, again, very important. And you have to check your equipment. Is it all working? Sometimes, every now and then, when I'm putting in a cartridge, the syringe, the cartridge of anesthesia, the cartridge is actually broken. It's cracked. So if you have a cracked cartridge and you start injecting, everything's going to leak everywhere, and that stuff is really, really bitter. So you're going to have a very unhappy patient. Okay. And also position is the key. So you need to position the patient right so that you're comfortable, patient's comfortable. Again, preparation, very important. You have to have a very firm hand rest. If you are pretty much dangling in midair, and this is the first time that you're injecting on your friend or your neighbor, you're going to be shaking like this. Your friend's going to look at you and say, you're not touching me. You're not touching me. So your patient's going to tell you the same thing, okay? And when you inject in the needle, you have to aspirate, meaning you have to draw the needle out, because draw the plunger, so that you have to make sure you're not injecting into a vessel. Sometimes you hit an artery, and the needle is very sharp. It goes into the artery, and if you don't draw or aspirate, if you just deliver the injection, what happens is that you have a patient who is on your chair with a history of seizure disorder. The lidocaine will lower their seizure threshold, and what happens is that you are going to make your patient seize on the chair. So it's very, very important. It's not just delivering some epinephrine into the artery and make their heart rate go up. You can actually cause medical problems. Okay. So aspiration is very, very important. Deposit the anesthesia very, very slowly.
What do you mean? Like you pull in a little, see if blood comes in. If it does, then you got to pull out and restick it. Is that how it works?
Exactly. So the question is, you know, if I go into an artery, what do we do? So if you go into an artery, the way you know is that when you pull the plunger back a little bit, you will see blood coming in. So if you see blood coming into the cartridge, you know that you're in an artery. So then you just have to redirect. You have to pull out just a little bit and redirect, and then you have to re-aspirate and check again. Question.
What are you looking for, like, if you don't have blood? Like, is it just like a clear, like...
Yeah.
So it's just nothing? Or nothing. Just like more fluid? Or
nothing.
Just nothing.
Nothing. Nothing. Yeah. Hopefully not more fluid, because right. Then you're in some other cavity.
Yeah.
Right? And not the eyeball.
Right.
So, all right. Okay, observe your patient after you deliver the anesthesia, because you don't just give it and say, I'll be back, and then you leave. And what if the patient's uncomfortable? What if the patient has that seizure disorder and that you delivered into the artery? So you just got to make sure your patient is okay, so don't leave the patient away from chair side. Question.
Are there any ways to anesthetize without actually injecting? Like, I know it's more superficial to apply to the device, but are there any, like, are there pills that can be given to work as anesthetics, or is there any other way besides actually using the needle to inject?
You mean, like, other ways of making the patient numb without giving the actual injection?
Yeah. But you need the same medication, so think of the medication you need.
Well, if the patient is awake and you need to make them numb, then injection is probably that's the way that we're doing. But we have patients who are very anxious, and of course in oral surgery clinic we have the advantage of being able to put the patient to sleep. So when the patient's asleep, we still inject, but they don't feel anything. So, but that's a whole different technique. That's a good question, but unfortunately we do have to inject.
There's no middle now.
Well, you can give a little topical anesthesia, but you know what? They still feel it with topical. They really do. Laughing gas is very unpredictable. It's a very good tool. It's a very good tool. It relieves anxiety, but it's unpredictable. And for little kids, you can potentially kind of make them really sleepy and make them forget things. But for adults like you and me, laughing gas is really, really don't work that well, and you can't really predict. But that's, again, that's no longer a local anesthesia. So today we're just going to cover local anesthesia. But that's a very good point. Yeah, but that goes into IV sedations and, you know, oral sedations and gases. That becomes a different topic. Okay, good question. Anything else before I go on? All right. So here's the cartridge. Here's another one. Here's the cartridge. Okay, here's the syringe. You see how long this needle is? Okay. So when you have to aspirate, you literally pull the plunger back, and you will see if there's blood, it's going to come in through here. Okay. And if there's nothing, you see nothing. You know, you might see one or two little bubbles coming in, but you're not going to see anything. That would be a negative aspiration. Positive aspiration meaning you have blood. Okay. A small reminder is that the way that you put the needle back in this cap is not with your other finger, it is with... You put it on the tray, and then you scoop up with the needle, okay? So do not do that, okay? What's wrong with this picture? By the way, I lost some weight since last year. What's wrong with this picture?
Well,
guess what? Believe it or not, remember this. Just remember this picture. Believe it or not, couple of years from now, when you're on the clinic floor, you're going to see, perhaps yourself, you're going to see other people keeping the needle right behind you like this. You're going to jab your neighbor in the knee, in your leg. When somebody's coming back, or you're a professor, whoever's going to come by to see what you're doing, you keep the needle right behind you, and you're going to jab somebody. That's my pet peeve, because I see a lot of people do that. Don't do that. It's number one. That's not safe. Number two, it's not clean. You're keeping it below your waist. So everything is going to be above. Okay, you have to keep it right by the field, which is in this case behind her head. Okay. All right. Maxillary anesthesia. There are different ways of making the patient numb. You have infiltration. which is very local. It's like giving interdental papilla. So if you're going to replace one tooth, for example, one specific tooth has a lot of calculus, you really need to get rid of it. You don't need to do a full block of posterior alveolar. You don't need to do that. It's too much. So you can just give a little interdental papilla block, and that would be infiltration. Another thing is called field block, which means you give a bolus of anesthesia into the mucobuccal sulcus, and what that does is numb up 2 to 3 teeth. So that's called a field block. And then, of course, you have the nerve block, which you block one whole region, and I will explain that more. Okay. Supraperiosteal. This is the bone. This is the periosteum. You don't want to put the needle into and underneath the periosteum, because the periosteum is very, very tight. It's not a very giving structure. So if you put the needle underneath and you expand that periosteum with a bolus of injection, the patient will have a lot of pain. They won't like you very much. What you want to do is you want to go above. Once you hit bone, you really need to retract and pull back a little bit so that you are not underneath the periosteum. When the patient's asleep, for example, under general anesthesia or IV sedation, when they're asleep, you can do that because they don't really feel that they're asleep. But if they're awake, they won't like you very much if you do that. Okay. So, maxillary infiltration technique. Okay. You can do the interdental papilla. Okay. And the field block that I talked about is into the mucobuccal sulcus. Okay. So this is the keratinized gingiva, and then this is the sulcus. And what you do is you go into the depth of the sulcus. You don't need to hit bone or anything. You just literally push the head of the needle in a little bit, and you can start delivering the bolus. Again, it only numbs up 2 to 3 teeth, and you can numb up the lip and as well as the tooth. High success rate, very easy to do, very little trauma. Okay. Nerve block. What do I have to do for the nerve block? Well, in here, you know where the anatomy is. You know where the nerve is coming down. Okay, so you do have to go behind the tuberosity area. Here's the tuberosity. Okay, so you do have to go behind the tuberosity, and your needle can really, really go pretty deep. Okay. So again, you need to know some. It's not a specific bony landmark, however, in the vicinity. So here's the tuberosity. You just go up high into the tuberosity, and you can get a nice block of a few teeth.
How do you get that angle?
You can either go straight up, or you can go this way.
So can you come from the outside? You don't want to do that, right?
Yeah. That'll scare your patients. That's a lot. So, good question. It's pretty easy to do. You can get a hematoma. Again, you need to draw your needle. You just have to aspirate. If you do not aspirate, sometimes you deliver into a vessel, and you inject so fast and you make the vessel bleed, and the patient can come back with a hematoma. Every now and then, you're going to see it. Okay. The MSA. Okay. So the MSA nerve is in 28% of the population. Again, it covers the premolars, and the lamar, same thing, just the height of the mucobuccal fold. You can go around the canine area or the premolar area, just go straight up. Pretty easy to do. Hematoma is a complication of almost everything. Okay. The infraorbital nerve block, very similar. You go straight up, okay? Because the infraorbital, you're going to feel the orbital rim first, and then, so you can feel it with your finger, feel the orbital rim, and then you just move down. As you press, you're going to feel a little depression. You know you're there when you press down, it really hurts. Okay? And that's where you're going to be. So your needle, same thing, you're going to look for the mucopuccal fold, and at the depth of the sulcus, you go straight up.
I'm going to stop palpating the patient's face over here. They might get scared.
You can, yeah.
Why are you touching me here, right?
Well, because you're telling them, you're giving them a very nice walk. So same thing, I just explained that to you. The depth of insertion, 16 millimeters, so it's pretty deep. Okay. Again, and that covers the anterior and all the way, including the premolars. Good injection, learn how to do that, because you will have a patient who will come back with an abscess of canine or premolar, and they're in a lot of pain. When you do give just a field block or definitely no intrapapilla, but just the field block, if it's not good enough, you probably need to do a higher block that include a bigger area. So you need to be able to do that. Greater palatine nerve block, which actually this coloring is wrong, but it should just cover up to the canine area. So it's this whole region. Okay. So what you do is you can use a cotton, here's the foramen, descending palatine, okay, that comes down here. And you use a cotton swab to feel the depression of the foramen and apply some pressure to blanch it a little so that your needle doesn't hurt that much. And you don't need to stick the needle all the way in and up to the hub, just a little bit, just, okay, because that's where the nerve comes out. So when you deposit the anesthesia, it's going to work very nicely. Uncomfortable, any injection in the palate is uncomfortable just because the palate tissue is very taut. Okay, it's almost like the periosteum. Nasal palatine, which is the incisal foramen area, okay, which covers up to the canine. Okay, so that anesthetizes the hard and soft tissue of the premaxilla. One injection can be done into the foramen up, but that area hurts. So what your book is suggesting is to give some buccal injection first in between the incisors, let that numb up, and then inject a little bit more into the papilla buccally. Once the papilla is numbed up, then you go palatally if you need to. Most likely you do need to, because I tried that before a few times, and most of the time you have to use the palatal, the incisal foramen injection. Nasal palatine, just explain. Okay. The nerve block for the maxillary nerve. Okay. Same thing, you have to go up really, really high. Okay. It's almost like the PSA, but you have to go straight up a little bit higher than that. The PSA can be a little bit lower, but the nerve block, you go up really, really high. Okay. It's a very good approach. You don't want to do that on children because that's torturous for them, and it's not necessary. For children, the maxilla is very, very soft compared to the adult, and when you infiltrate with anesthesia, it really goes into the bone very quickly, so you don't really need to torture the kids with that. The depth is very deep. It's almost a whole needle, so it's 30 millimeters, and you aim for the pterygo palatine fossa. And it covers everything. Okay. Greater palatine approach. You can do the maxillary nerve block using the greater palatine approach is into the foramen. Remember, I was telling you about the greater palatine foramen, that earlier you only put the needle in just a little bit. But if you want to do the full nerve block, you can then put the whole needle in. However, it's kind of scary because the whole needle goes straight in. You're afraid that you might hit the eyeball, which can be a complication. Mandibular anesthesia. Infiltration, we covered that with just like the maxilla. So the anterior mandibular bone is kind of thin, so you can infiltrate the incisors. Canine is a little bit harder to infiltrate just because at the canine region, the bones start to get a little bit thicker. I have infiltrated it, but it doesn't work as well. Mostly just the incisors. Again. again, you deposit into the mucobuccal, into the sulcus, at the depth of the sulcus. And it numbs up to 3T, including the lip. Mental nerve block. I know your book says that it doesn't work very well to the premolars, but in reality, it really does. It's saying that the only it works for the skin and the gingiva, buccal gingiva of the premolars. However, for premolar extractions, I just give the mental nerve block and it works beautifully. So when you go to the clinic, you can give it a try. If it works for you, great. If it doesn't work, give the mandibular block. But it's very easy. You don't have to find the foramen. You don't want to inject into the mental foramen because you can injure the nerve this way. What you want to do is, you know that the foramen is in between the two premolars and it's more apical to the apex of the premolars. So that's the vicinity. What you want to do is just as if you're giving an infiltration. So you find the depth of the sulcus and you put your needle in. Don't look for the foramen, just deposit the anesthesia. That itself is already mental nerve block. Okay, and it covers these teeth. It can come all the way up to the incisor, but it's mostly the canine and the premolars. It works very well, it's very easy, very little trauma. Long buccal nerve, hardly any landmarks are necessary. You just come to the buccal of the third molar and you find the depth of the sulcus, you deposit your anesthesia right there. Okay? See that right there? And it works 100%. Inferior alveolar question.
What do you look for when, since like a lot of us don't have our third molars? So you just go.
You look
like,
for the second molars and go a little bit beyond.
Just guesstimate, sort of?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, second molars. But then you will go, you because you know where the third molar should be.
Right.
Right. So you find your second molar. Or what if a patient is edentulous, have no teeth, right? So you know where the third molar should be, and then you just go buccally to it.
Is there a way once you do the block to kind of like test out before you start working where
Well, there's a crude way of testing is that when you start working and the patient's like, ah!
Right, same with
that. Yeah. Believe me, that's the oral surgery way of checking. You've got the very, very, the very delicate way of testing is that, you know, you take one of your instruments and you start poking around and you ask the patient, do you feel it? But believe me, that's a great way. You know, your patient will tell you, like, I feel it, I don't feel it. But then in oral surgery, when you see high volume, you know, you literally almost start working and the patient will tell you, I feel pain. So then I said, all right, I'm going to give you another question somewhere.
Where are you most likely to hit an artery? What's the most common area?
Very good. So again, know your anatomy because... here I'm going to start. I will answer your question as I'm going along with this. Okay, the next segment, which is the inferior alveolar nerve block. Well, that's a great block. It does have a small failure, just because if we're not familiar with our anatomy, then we're not going to know exactly where to go. Okay. Positive aspiration. Remember that means you're going to see blood in the cartridge, around 10 to 15%. I would say higher than that clinically, because when you're shooting towards that nerve, when you are aiming towards that nerve, the nerve and the artery and the vein travel with it. So guess what? You're going to hit something. Okay. So it anesthetizes anterior two-thirds of the tongue. Okay. The limbal nerve is included in the mandibular teeth all the way to the midline. The mental nerve distribution, of course, because that's part of the inferior alveolar nerve and the limbal soft tissues. The average depth of the penetration is pretty deep, 20 to 25 millimeters.
How often do variations configure, or you know,
like,
We learn when we do anatomy, a lot of times there are variations from people to people, from person to next person. So how often do you find that you inject what you think is the nerve and the nerve is somewhere else? Or there's an aberrant something or other?
Right. How often do you find variations or aberrant nerves? You do find variations, but when patient is not numb, what you do is you just redirect. You give another one, and you aim a little higher. And there are different techniques that I'm going to talk about that that I will be able to answer more of your question also. When you deposit one cartridge and you're not sure if you got it after you wait and patient's not numb, then you can go for a different technique, or you may just veer off just a little bit because you can't see through the patient, but you're hoping that overall, in general, this is where the nerve should be coming from, right. And that's what you're going to shoot for. Okay. So, yeah. Where
are you? You said that you can try again. How many times do you have to try again?
You need to know the total amount of local anesthesia that the patient is allowed to have. And then you also need to know your patient. Remember, I was talking about not just what you're going to do, but you have to know who you're going to deal with, because some patients you cannot give more than the average amount, and other patients, depends on their size, maybe you can give a little bit more. Okay, so that you need to also understand your anesthesia, and that is a different topic as well. Okay, so the direct technique. Well, we know that where the nerve is coming from, and here's the foramen, okay, where the nerve is coming down. So you want to aim at this direction, right? So some of the landmark, you need to know the occlusal plane of your mandibular teeth. You need to know the coronoid notch, because you can feel that intraorally. And you can feel the width of the mandible. And since the foramen is somewhere in the middle, in between, so what you need to do is once your needle hits the mandible, in other words, when you hit bone, at least vicinity-wise, you're somewhere there, okay? And but you need to know your other landmarks. So this is the region that you're going to go. So area of insertion, you want to hit the medial aspect of the mandibular ramus. And what you want to do is, of course, the nerve comes in into the canal. So you don't want to hit trying to aim here. The nerve is already inside the bone. So you want to hit before the nerve hides inside the bone. So you want to hit the nerve around here. Okay? So the coronary notch, the pterygomandibular raphae, which is intraorally, it's going to be around here. At the raphe, and the occlusal plane of the mandibular teeth, because that's the horizontal plane. That's where you're going to go, and you're going to go about 8 to 10 millimeters above the teeth. So here is your raphe, okay, the pterygomandibular raphe. You're going to come right anterior to that, and the finger is resting at the coronoid notch. So this whole thing is the mandible, that's the pharynx, but the width of the mandible. So you're going to be right in the middle, and that's your target. Okay. What happens when you go too posteriorly? What are you going to hit? That is what you're going to hit. Seventh nerve. Okay. That you don't want to do on your friend on the first day of trying anesthesia, because 2 minutes later you're going to notice that your buddy, that side, he's starting to droop, he's starting to tear, he can't close his eyes, and he starts to curse at you because you hit the facial nerve, and the facial nerve provides motor, right? Motor innervation to the facial muscles. So you can't go too far back if you go there. In other words, if you hit bone, your landmark is the mandible. You've got to hit bone. If you don't hit bone and you're already at the hub of your needle, you've got to withdraw and you've got to redirect. Because if you go too far back, you're going to be depositing the anesthesia right into the facial nerve, and he's going to hate you for the next few hours. Although he will recover, you tell him it's temporary. I'm sorry, I'll buy you dinner. It's temporary.
What properties of of certain nerves make them more susceptible to damage? Like you were saying that certain, I mean, besides being a nerve root, are there other properties that, you know, it's not okay to inject those nerves?
Well, right? You're hoping that you don't want to inject into the nerve, and that's very, very, very rare.
Okay.
It's very rare that you'll actually inject the nerve. It has happened. Patients will come back with a lot of nerve pain. They'll have they'll have a lot of discomfort, and every now and then, unfortunately, the nerve can get hit. But you know, it's very, very rare.
Okay.
But it's like there's no way to avoid that.
Sometimes you can't. Sometimes you don't know, because you don't know. It's nerve itself.
You'd be the world's best anatomist.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Unless you use like fluoroscopy, or you can see, which it's very expensive. Very, very rare. Rest assured, it's very rare. But yes, it does happen, and you have the potential of hitting the nerve.
I was wondering, if you're injecting a patient and they have a panic attack, like all of a sudden they slap that needle out of your hand, is there a way that you keep your hands in a certain position to minimize the odds of that needle injecting you?
Well, number one, you stabilize. It's a very good question, because it can happen. You'll have patients who may try to cooperate, try to be the best they can, but then in the middle of you working, you know, it may not even be an injection. You might be doing something else with, you know, you might be carrying a high-speed handpiece and you're working, and they all of a sudden start to flail at you. Then, you know, you just gotta, you just have to be very stable, keeping everything under control. You have to, you know, you can't flare with them. You just have to, you know, remove whatever that's in danger out away from the field for both of you. So it can potentially happen, but you just have to be prepared that, you know, what can happen. It can. I have patients sit on the chair before, and you just got to remain calm. You got to do the next thing and call for help, and, you know, when you make the patient more comfortable, when you act more calm, even though you may not feel it, but if you act more calm, the patient will calm down more easily than if both of you are kind of feeling out of control. Let's go on. Label nerve block. I gotta move fast. So, again, lingual nerve. As you're doing the inferior alveolar nerve block, as you're retracting, you're continuing to give the anesthesia. That itself is going to give the lingual nerve block. So it's the same direction. It's just that as you're pulling the needle out, you deposit a little bit more, you're going to hit the lingual nerve. Okay, very easy. Same thing. Same landmarks. Okay. Now, what if your direct technique doesn't work? What if I give the, you know, I know the nerve is there. I know I gave the right way. I don't know why, somehow I'm unable to give give a good block. Maybe because the patient couldn't open wide enough because of an infected third molar. When they're unable to open because of pain, then, you know, and you want to be able to get good landmark and you're unable to, what do I do? There is a closed mouth technique. It's called the agonosy technique. What you do is that instead of approaching across, okay, what your needle, your syringe is going to come on the same side, the ipsilateral, the same side, and then you're going to deposit right there. So this is what you do. You are going to find the level. The level is going to be at the maxillary teeth, okay, and that's going, and you're going to go up at the mucogingival junction of the maxillary teeth, and your needle is going to go, here's the tuberosity. The needle is going to go way beyond the tuberosity, okay, because the mandibular nerve comes down like that. So you want to hit. So it's actually pretty scary the first time that you do it. Your needle is almost buried in the soft tissue in the cheek. But you are if you know your landmarks very well, then you know you're at the right place, and it works beautifully.
So why don't you just start there?
Hmm?
Why don't you just start there?
You can, but it's a little scary because of how deep it goes. You have no soft, you have no hard tissue landmark. You don't hit bone. You literally go into darkness, and then you're like, oh, I think I'm there. And that's not a good place to start. Yeah, you should know your anatomy and work with it first. The book, this I kind of laugh at, because the book says the reason that you do a closed mouth is the inability to visualize the landmarks because of a large tongue. Please. There's another technique. It's called a high mandibular block, which is also Galgate's. That is what's called a true mandibular block, because everything is literally in one shot. Everything is numb, including the lung buckle, okay, and the auricular temporal, which is one of the branches. Okay. However, it's hard to do because you've got to find the condylar neck, which is how, look how skinny that is. You know, you're going to miss it, so it's hard. But once you do get it, then you've got the whole third division. Okay. So it's high. It's very, very high up. You come in contralaterally. You go up at the level of tuberosity, okay, and you literally shoot, go upwards, but you got to hit bone, because that bone is the condylar neck. Once you hit that bone, then you retract a little bit and you deposit. Okay? Again, buccal nerve block is unnecessary. It's high success with experience. Okay. Extraoral. Didn't you mention about extraoral? Well, yes, actually, some people do it, but we don't. So, just want to show you. Complications. There are definitely complications. We have definitely seen needle breakage, so do not bend your needles because you might break it. And if you lose the needle in somebody's pharynx, guess what? You have a lot of explaining to do. So every now and then, needles break. Okay. Pain. Well, that's not a complication. That's a side effect. However, if it gets, if you go into the nerve afterwards, there can be a lot of pain. The nerve can have neuroma, so that is a potential side effect. Burning sensation, persistent anesthesia, again, that has to do with the fact that you inject into the nerve. Hematoma, infection, facial nerve, that's a side effect. Complication. Okay. Allergy, very rare these days that patients have allergies, but it can happen. Epinephrine, that's a side effect. And of course, you don't want to overdose your patient. Remember, the question is that how much should I give earlier? You have to know your anesthesia, what you're giving, how much you should give per kilogram, and you have signs and symptoms of patients where patients are overdosed. Okay. All set. Questions?
What's the definition of trismus?
Trismus is inability to open your mouth due to some mechanical reason. That's a good question. Trismus.
Well, just thank Dr. Huang again.
All
right, stay here for just a little bit, okay? I need to give you guys a little explanation. First of all, okay, as you can see, this lecture correlates a lot to your laboratory, right? I hope that linked you directly, okay? Now, every single foramina or ramen that you are learning in a lab has a direct impact to your practice.